Welcome to Crosstalk. Thank you for joining the channel. I hope you guys subscribe, share, like, comment. We want to hear what you have to say. We are a nonprofit and our goal is to raise money for people to get scholarships and help. So please support us, share. We just love the support and, you know, our mission is to help people. Thank you so much again for joining. And I have Sarah Frias with me today.
Well, thank you for inviting me. So my name's Sarah.
So tell me a little bit how your life started. Where did you grow up? What did life look like when you were young Sarah?
I was born in Cape Cod, Massachusetts, Falmouth to be exact, to my parents. I was their miracle baby, I always like to say, because they thought they couldn't have kids. So they adopted two boys. Oh. And then when they were a little bit older, they got pregnant, and here I was. So I was spoiled, obviously, being the girl, Sarah meaning princess. I think my childhood was really good. My brothers were great, even though they're such a big age gap, 9 and 11.
So but, you grew up on the Cape?
Yeah.
Oh my God, I hear so many stories.
It's like, great in the summer.
Yeah.
It's beautiful in the summer.
I've been to Provincetown.
Oh yeah, yeah, I love going there. In the winter, though, there's nothing to do. Everything's closed at like 4 or 5. You know, there's a lot of drinking on the Cape. I mean, it's a tourist attraction. Yeah. So
they have a whole show called Hightown.
Hightown. Oh, yeah. That was a good show. So they actually canceled it, sadly.
Oh, no.
I know. But so nothing really like triggered in my childhood. It's just like me. I always felt less than. I always felt like I didn't belong. I always thought like people had more money than me. I wasn't as attractive or popular. And I didn't feel comfortable in my skin. Like I transitioned through all these changes. Like I was trying to be a hippie or like gothic or punk or whatever, like preppy, you know, like all the things, because I felt like I didn't know what felt comfortable for me, which none of it did.
I can relate to all of that. Oh my God.
So,
especially the gothic phase.
I had big, so I had my ears sewed up, but I had massive gauges for a really long time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They were huge. Dyed my hair black. I mean, I went through all purple. Definitely went through a lot of phases. And I think the goth one was the least favorite of my parents with the gauges. They were not happy about that. So I just started hanging out with people that drank and smoked weed. And that was just kind of, I just hung out with people like that. Like I wanted to party. I felt like I fit into that group. And once I started doing that, the drinking and the smoking, I actually had, when I was 15 years old, kind of when that started, I ended up cutting for a period of time. They don't do that anymore, but you could have like a secret like blog almost, like
diary
online.
Do
you remember those?
I used to. I have an eating disorder history, which goes a lot with cutting.
Yeah.
And I used to follow these blogs called Anna. And yeah, they probably exist somewhere
in the cyber world.
Like in the on the black web or something. But yeah, I was really obsessed with finding them, and then they would get shut down, and then I would like search again.
Yeah. So I always looked for more so like the darker, obviously, ones, the sadder ones. Then I started writing my own stuff. So I was just so unhappy. Then I got into cocaine and I stopped cutting because I was
How old were you?
16.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and it wasn't anything, I mean, there's definitely signs that there was a problem there, but I was still like going to school, but my behavior was erratic and, you know, I was just so uncomfortable with myself. I did graduate and I decided to go to LPN school. So like right below an RN, it's more of like a trade school, less books, more clinical works.
Ooh,
which I'm
like that.
Yeah. So it's like more hands-on, but obviously there's, you know, an RN has a higher level. They can do a lot more. But so I went to trade school, and that's actually when I got addicted to opiates. I had a boyfriend that I lived with and I was doing cocaine, and he said, well, why don't you take this? It will help you go to sleep. And that's when the pill mills were, you know, down in Florida and where everybody was doing them. And that's how I got addicted to opiates. So I actually completed my nursing
program. So you went to school down here?
No, it was in Cape Cod. Yeah.
Oh, you're still
But the
Cape
pill
Cod.
Mills. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because everybody had, you know, the pain pills everywhere and they're easy to get. So I actually graduated from the nursing program while addicted to pain pills.
Wow.
I got a job while addicted to pain pills.
So you were pretty high functioning.
In the beginning, yeah.
Well, right.
With the pain pills, yeah, right. Absolutely. I mean, for that, yeah, I mean, it wasn't pretty. But my disease always told me I'm only a good nurse when I do pills. I'm quicker. I'm more efficient. I have a greater personality. My patients like me more when I'm doing pills. So I kind of like ran with that. Worked in orthopedic. So there's a lot of pain pills around.
I see an orthopedic surgeon.
Yeah. Yeah. So I did like rehabilitation for like, you know, more geriatric people with knee and hip replacements, those type of things, which obviously then there's pain pills with that. And that was kind of my screaming to get some help. I was just, it was exhausting.
Right. You're in your early 20s, I assume, at this point.
Yeah, I was in my 25.
Okay.
So ironically, our detox in Cape Cod is so small. It was right next to my job. So I went to detox and...
Did you? So you yourself like walked yourself into detox?
Oh, no. Yeah, oh. I should probably... So...
I need more details.
Yeah, no. So I ended up knowing that I feel like I wanted help. So I took a bunch of my mom's jewelry knowing she'd notice where she came over. And I said, like, you know, I have a problem. And then... she got me into detox next door to my job, and it was detox. You know, I got out, I thought it was like fixing. And then the moment I got out, I went right back to it. But the issue was when I was in detox, everybody else was talking about other substances. They weren't talking about opiates anymore. They were talking about, you know, heroin and, using needles and that type of stuff. Of course, then I met some great people that I wanted to hang out. Yeah, I wanted to hang out with all these really cool people. They looked awesome, you know. So I started hanging out with people that weren't doing the pills anymore.
Right. It's like when you fall in love in treatment and you're like, oh, our trauma bond is so strong. No one else.
We're
in love.
We're writing letters together. We're going to be together forever. Yeah, I've been there. So unfortunately, I started using heroin and I couldn't work as a nurse, obviously.
So you were injecting.
I started injecting, yeah. No idea what I was doing.
And this was pre-fentanyl, though, right?
Thank God, yeah.
Thank God. Mm-hmm. I mean, not that injecting heroin is
no, but safe or good, I mean, but look at all the overdoses now, just in relation to fentanyl.
I think about that all the time. The fact that I got sober in 2016, and I really just missed the boat.
Same.
And I was ordering with a friend of mine. Actually, he's going to come on the podcast on Sunday. He's going to
oh, that's awesome.
With us. He is down here. He's sober. And we used to order like FedEx bags of pressed Xanax pills.
No way.
And some of them worked, some of them didn't. So we would like just like
pick through and
pick
see.
Through
yeah.
And just like put a handful in our mouth and like maybe we'll have a seizure. Maybe we won't.
And now
like,
they probably have fentanyl in them.
Oh my God. I can't even. I remember some of them felt funny. Mm. Like this isn't Xanax, yeah. Obviously. And then some of them, you don't feel anything. So yeah. I didn't care. I was like asking to die. I don't care if I didn't want to die, but like I didn't care
exactly
about any of it.
Yeah,
you know?
I know. It's definitely scary. Been there many of times. Yeah. And I feel like as it went on for me, that not caring became more and more. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was in and out of detox randomly. Somehow, I guess I applied to the bridge program. So you can go from an LPN and get your RN on heroin. That lasted about a week. Like, I just couldn't make it to class. If my drug dealer wasn't around.
How did you afford class?
My parents usually helped me with it. They're really supportive with, you know, anything that would be beneficial, yeah. Like right. That. So always like if I wanted to go to school and those type of things, you know, they were definitely yeah. Willing to help. So luckily I didn't take out any student loans during those times. God. And that kind of started once I dropped out of that program. You know, I went in and out of this detox 6 or 7 times in like, you know, a month and a half period. And they were like, this isn't working. And it started really my journey of going in and out of treatment centers, kind of that, what did they used to call it? It's like a rehab hop, just hopping around to different rehabs. And
what year is this?
So it was probably 2013.
Okay.
2012, 2013. I didn't get sober, you know, until 2017 is my sobriety date now. And
it's amazing.
Yeah, my mom would even look up states that didn't have any drugs. Like, that's what she would Google. I'm like, you know, so I went to Portland, Maine. I went to New Jersey.
States that don't have drugs, New Jersey. Maine.
Yeah, I know. That was before. She didn't look up that one. Yeah, yeah. That was actually my first treatment
Google
center.
Google was really wrong then.
Well, that was my first treatment center outside of Cape Cod. Naive Cape Cod girl. I thought everywhere was an island, and I got put, you know, in Jersey, which in a
Where
nice area.
Where in Jersey, do you remember?
So the treatment center was in Princeton.
Okay.
It was in a hotel on the third floor. It was really nice. I think they shut down, obviously. But I got sent to an Oxford house, which, you know, is run, governed by the people in the house. So there's no, you know, manager. It's all the women. It's more common up in Jersey area.
I've heard of them. I think in early recovery, I'd heard of them more, but now I don't know that.
It's kind of silly. I don't, yeah. I mean, to each its own. I mean, it could have worked now, you know, but it definitely didn't work then.
If you wanted it.
Yeah, exactly. Right. No, I mean, the girls were doing good there. Just me. because I went to that house and it was 20 minutes from Camden, New Jersey. And I've never seen, you know, people just on the street selling drugs. And I was like, wow, this is convenient, you know. So obviously that kind of ended my New Jersey stay for a period of time. And, you know, as my disease went on, you know, I became.
So you're still doing heroin, still injecting heroin.
Now I'm shooting cocaine too.
Okay. Is that crack?
So no, well, there's that. It can be. So, I mean, eventually my ending is.
I never shot, basically. Like, okay, I never, yeah. So that's the only those are the only terminologies I, like, get, you know.
So, yeah. So coke is just, like, regular cocaine.
Right. I know that. Yeah. I did a lot of that.
So the
and I lived in Peru for 2 years, so, you know.
Oh, yeah. So you actually had good stuff. Yeah. And, no, so it was just regular cocaine and, you know, I just didn't want it.
Yeah.
I just wanted a little break just for me to go back to doing what I was doing. I liked the adventure of it and like the feeling of it.
Right.
Yeah. Didn't really care about my future or anything. You know, it's just merely kind of like
I feel
existing.
Like there's no thinking of a
no,
future.
It's just go.
It's kind of like, where's the next high?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
But not thinking that way.
No.
Just like, that's where you're at.
That's what I've been doing for so long that it was normal.
That's so sad, right?
Yeah, it's really sad.
I remember living in that, like, I call it, like, I felt like a ghost. Mm. I look back on it and I feel like it's like a, like if you could do like a cartoon of it, it would be this like hollow figurine like transparent, you know, just like walking through life, you know?
Yeah.
That's how I felt.
Yeah. I feel like that was for sure me and just like looking down and not really like having any like real relationships or connections with people because really any relationship I had was based solely on
drugs. Right. Me too.
Which isn't a relationship. I mean, I guess if you want to call it that.
At the time we thought we were best friends.
Oh yeah. We're friends forever, you know, until something happens. Yeah. I mean, some of them have gotten sober and, you know, we wish each other well and then others have passed away, you know? So I really know for me now, that I was lucky enough and blessed enough to not be a person that, you know, passed away from this and to be hope for other people. And, and that's kind of always my goal. And that's why I do what I do now, you know, personally and professionally. And so I think my hardest time, and it's so funny how you see, not funny, but you see kind of like your transition down in your disease and, you know, even the manipulation of it sometimes is so sneaky. You know, if you just do, I'm just going to drink.
Right.
I don't like drinking. And then it lasts for a little bit and you're like, I got this, but then it'll come in, you know, and you'll go back to the same spot. And it's just so interesting how manipulating it can be.
Oh my God. So even in sobriety, like I can convince myself of certain things because that's how my mind works.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like I can eat, if I like a popsicle kind, like I got into these coconut, I'll eat like 3 boxes.
Oh yeah.
And then I'll be like, I'm going to buy them, but like,
not
eat them all, you know? And that's how I know, like, I can't go back to drugs because I actually can be such an addict in sobriety.
Oh yeah.
You know?
No, I do the same thing. So funny is, my mom's visiting, she gets these cookies, right? And there's like 2 left. You think that I would just take one and save it, but no, I'm going to eat both of them.
Yeah,
you
know? Of course.
And then she's going to be like, who ate the cookie? Obviously it was me.
Yeah.
You know? So I still do it, you know, but I'm just honest about it now. I'm like, yeah, I ate them both. They're really good.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So I'm like, I didn't eat them. Yeah, you know? So there's growth there.
I have no one to lie to. I live alone.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, see, that's, well, the dogs.
Right. Of course.
Yeah. I talk to my dog, so it's fine. Me too. She's like my baby. I feel like, you know, my story is much like other people that kind of have been to South Florida, which is kind of that shuffle, going around in and out of treatment, meeting people, you know, doing what you had to do to get your next high. My interesting factor about Florida, there's two parts, is I want to say in 2015, I went to treatment and I got sent to a sober living in Baltimore, which I know we were just discussing Baltimore.
Yeah.
And I'd never been there. I wanted to get out of Florida, and the owner of the facility was like, I'm from Baltimore, like, you should go there. Okay. I don't know. And I walked in, and it was this sober living. It does amazing work, by the way. Amazing. But at that time, I walked in, and my roommate was like this old woman, crackhead. And there were no windows, and it was a mattress on the floor.
Oh, wow.
And I was hysterical. But, like, I brought myself there. And I was, like, freaking out. Of course, my mom is like, oh, my God, we have to find a different place. And I was like, you know what? Maybe it didn't. In my head, it's, like, that I was like, okay, I'm going to stay here. But I'm sure someone was like, just suck it up for a couple of days. And I stayed. And actually, it was such an amazing recovery journey for me that I just love. I love Baltimore's recovery. It's because, I mean, it's right there, you know, like the addiction is right there when you walk outside.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, it's, I feel like it's center of a lot of overdosing right now.
Oh, yeah. It's really, I mean, I worked actually randomly in a, what do they call it? Like a craft beer bar restaurant in the city. And there was just people like just sleeping, standing up. And, you know, I was.
That was me.
Yeah. Oh, God, that was never me. I was usually sleeping on the floor. But,
I've slept on the bar before like this for like 4 hours. No one woke me up.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I feel like I would have, because I also feel like I've seen someone sleep like that and I always worry about your hand. So I would have woken you up because of the hand, because your hand can go numb and you can lose the circulation.
Oh, I had a crush on the owner. So I just stayed till like,
oh my God, that's amazing. That's great. He's like, okay, here she is sleeping again. You're like, is it time? Are we closing now?
Oh no, he wanted nothing to do with me. I just couldn't get that.
Oh. Anyway. Oh,
so you're in Baltimore, mattress on the floor, no windows.
Yeah.
That's like some hardcore recovery in your face.
I upgraded though. Like eventually I moved upstairs, you know.
Oh, is that how it starts basically?
I think so. They're like, you're going into, I forget what they called it. I don't know, something box.
Well, you could comment on the link when you remember what it's called.
I'll have to think about it for sure. And but no, I mean, I went to meetings. I got a job that wasn't nursing. You know, I really was focused on my recovery. But in saying that, you know, I was still taking me with me. And once I put the drugs down, I'm still Sarah Frias. You know, there's so much more work to be done. I don't think I comprehended that.
Right.
You know, I'm like, okay, I'm not doing drugs.
Were you doing any sort of, you know, I talk a lot on this podcast about how there are like different paths to recovery that I don't necessarily think you have to do a 12-step program. Mm. I did one. It worked for me. I still go. I'm not as involved as I used to be.
Yeah.
But did you ever get into a 12-step recovery?
Yeah. So in Baltimore was NA. It's really big there. Mm-hmm. I went to some AA meetings there, but it was always NA. Cape Cod was NA. Narcotics Anonymous.
I know. Up north, it's more NA. Down
there, it's more NA. I got sober here in AA. I needed to do my steps quick. I needed to.
Me too.
So that was kind of the benefit for me. And I just, now I don't go as much. I've actually restarted and recommitted to going to, I've been doing AA Zoom meetings, which is really cool.
Maybe I'll join the one you've restarted. I wouldn't mind, you know, going.
Yeah. So I'm trying to, it's just hard. I have two kids. Yeah. To go out at night. So I've been like doing a Zoom. I try to do like a meditation one because it's so uncomfortable for me.
Oh, I love meditating.
So I'm like, that's what I look for in Zoom meetings. And I have, you know.
I'll teach you how to meditate.
Oh my gosh. It's like one thing. I tried to do one the other day. I didn't know it was 20 minutes long.
Oh, I've done 45 minutes.
Oh, no.
After on my 10. Own, like with no guide.
That's amazing.
It's been a journey, but yeah, I'll tell
so
you
this
about
is
that.
New.
Yeah.
And 20 minutes was a long time. So I had to cut it at 10, but I usually am able to color and like those type of things. So I'm supportive of any recovery meetings, different types. I think I'm like you, like you don't necessarily have to do that. For me, it was something that I had to do for sure in the beginning.
Yeah,
especially the
me
steps.
Too. And also just learning about the fellowship,
meeting
having
people,
some discipline,
yeah,
having to
accountability.
Commit to, yeah, the, mm-hmm. The accountability, which I still think is important. I do, you know, have a lot of friends still in that, you know, I just don't go to as much as I used to. I'm not as involved. I'm not chairing like 5 meetings a week,
same,
which
yeah.
it was a
it
lot. It was a lot,
different.
You know, as you progress, I think also in 12 step, it's like, I always call it like the second year and third year. I was so obsessed. I was like, Miss, you know, Captain.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah.
Like if you don't go to 7 meetings a week, are you even sober? Like, I don't want to be that person.
No.
That person's like, no one wants to be around you.
No.
You
yeah,
know?
It's judgmental. We're
yes.
trying to be
yes.
helpful for anybody, you know,
exactly.
And that's kind of, I'm the same 100%.
So I've evolved, I think.
Yeah, same. I think we all evolve.
Yeah.
I guess that's the point of it, right?
I think so. I think, yeah.
So. So, unfortunately, I got into a very toxic relationship because, like I said, you know, I'd put down the drugs, but I was still left with
right.
me and barely doing step work, and it was pretty bad. Like, we used a lot together, and long story short is, you know, unfortunately, he passed away after the fact of when I moved down here. But I knew that, like, I had to get away from Baltimore. I do love it. But so I came back down to Florida. Florida feels like my home now.
Yeah, me too.
I don't think I'd leave. I've been asked, like, you know, to move here, move there. And I feel comfortable here. Like, I talked about in the beginning, my own skin. Like, I feel like I found, like, my being comfortable in my own skin here.
I feel the same way.
Yeah, I love it. I don't care about the 100-degree humidity weather and all that.
I mean, my apartment is so cold right now. We could literally like be wearing cashmere sweatpants.
I know. I usually, my mom walks in, she's like, are you wearing a hoodie and sweatpants? I'm like, yeah, it's cold in here.
I leave my apartment in a hoodie anyway.
Same.
And like, people are like, what is she doing? I'm like, well, I'm freezing.
Yeah, exactly. No, you prepare before you get into
exactly.
your apartment. I think I'll talk about when I got sober. So obviously I came down here. I got about 6 months or so. I worked really hard.
2017.
Okay. It was like 2016.
Around I came down in November of 2016, so probably
around there.
The same
yeah.
time.
The sad thing is, and I don't know if it's from my drug use or just going in and out of treatment centers, that my timelines sometimes get like confusing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, grateful that I remember my sobriety date. Yeah. But I had about 6 months, and I ended up relapsing, and I overdosed. And I was like mad. I remember crying, being like, I had time, you know,
blaming
everybody else, but like I hadn't done anything. And it took me on this really deep, dark journey that totally changed my life. I ended up moving into this place with this girl that was in recovery because I thought maybe that would keep me sober.
Right.
I thought moving to Jupiter would keep me sober because, you know, my drug dealers were down south and that didn't work either. So I was trying all these things when I knew what the solution was. And I got caught by my roommate and I went to treatment and my insurance cut me off after like 14 days. And I was like, that's fine. I was ready. Because what had happened is, when I got to the treatment center, I had severe wounds on my legs because I, at that time, was now doing IV crack. So it was breaking down my skin and my legs. I was also doing heroin, cocaine, anything really. And I had no veins anymore. So my body was basically like breaking down and I didn't care. So they were like, you have to go to the hospital, obviously, to get evaluated, to get cleared.
Wow.
So they did bone grafts because they were like, I think that your infection's in your bone. You're going to lose your leg. And I was like, I don't care. Like, I didn't care.
Wow.
Yeah. So luckily, obviously, I have
two
legs.
I have, like, chills all over my body. That's so scary.
And when I tell people that, they're like, I couldn't even picture this moment, you know?
I understand that feeling of not caring, but I can't.
Yeah. Yeah, I was, they were pretty bad. I still have scars on my legs that took me about like 3 or 4 years to be comfortable with myself. So I would never wear shorts. I would never wear skirts. Now I don't care.
Right.
It just is what it is.
That's how I feel about all my stretch marks and everything.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, whatever. You get to the point where you're like, I don't care.
I'm thin, so yeah, leave me alone.
Yeah, leave me alone. I look good otherwise. And when I was in the hospital, basically they told me that, you know, I just needed like IV, like severe IV antibiotics and all this stuff. And I ended up AMAing out of the hospital. I don't know how I got down to a bad area in Boynton, but I did. I don't remember because I was on Ativan because I was withdrawing. And I ended up walking around with no shoes on in hospital gown.
Oh my God.
For a day.
Yeah.
And that brought me to back to treatment. And after that moment, I was just like, I'm done. You know, that was it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I got out in 14 days and I was like, this is it. I'm not going back. I can't go back.
Right. Well, you're going to die.
Exactly.
Like, or you were.
Yeah. I just felt like so sad. And
yeah.
It was defeated. Not a life. Yeah. Just defeated. And obviously it wasn't perfect. I definitely, you know, my sobriety date's May 7th, 2017.
Amazing.
But it's taken me a long time to like find myself. So it was not, you know, like I said before, like, okay, I'm not doing drugs, but still my behaviors were terrible. I was in and out of terrible relationships. I was talking about everybody, you know, like just totally.
Were you living in Boynton area?
So I live in Boynton now.
Okay.
I used in Boynton. I didn't stay in Boynton when I.
Like when you first got sober?
No. Oh. It was more so like Palm Beach Gardens area. Okay. So now, you know, I kind of transitioned. I did sober living, which wasn't pretty. You know, I did the steps. And now here I am. You know, I have my own house. I'm engaged. I have two kids.
Wait, don't fast forward too fast. I want to hear, you know, more about, so like early, so I like to like ask people, because we're around the same time. Like,
yeah.
We're like very, we're pretty much the same.
Yeah.
And so like, I know what my evolution has looked like in sobriety, but what has it looked like for you? Like in terms of like in the beginning, you said you did go to sober living, mm-hmm. you did do a program. Like how has your sobriety kind of evolved over the years, like changed in what you do to make yourself sane?
Yeah. So it's definitely for sure 100%. I think when I first got sober, all I could focus on was like going to meetings, doing my step work, trying to find some women to spend time with that mm-hmm. I wanted to spend time with.
It's hard to meet good women.
It took me a while to find solid women in the program, and now I have like an amazing group of small, like a small group of women that are amazing to me. And I think that was kind of doing the step work and finding that group of women has been detrimental because I don't get to go to meetings all the time. And I have that group of women that I'm able to talk to and almost do like mini meetings with.
Yeah.
And I mean, that to me is so like important. Yeah. So it's definitely, while I appreciate AA and everything that's done, I've definitely had backlash, unfortunately, from some people that are very much like, you know, AA gave you a life and you're kind of just like, okay, thank you. But that's not how I feel at all.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm appreciative of it. I know how important it was to get me to where I am now. And I still do it. It just doesn't look the same as everybody else.
I mean, I'm with you. I still sponsor girls. I do a lot of volunteer work at Karen.
Yeah.
I talk about Karen all the time. And my meeting attendance doesn't look the same, but that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that I've talked about it with someone you're very close with, Amanda, mm-hmm. you know, just generally like with her, with other women who are successful women.
Yeah.
And who some work in this business, some don't. I don't work in this business, although I do some coaching and I do breath works and things like that, yeah. which I'll tell you all about
yeah,
later.
I love that.
Anyway, point being is that like it doesn't have to look the same.
No,
and
it
like
doesn't.
People have to like stop with the judgment. Yeah. And isn't that what it's not about?
Well, that's the issue sometimes. Yeah. I feel like, you know, that happens with it. My biggest thing is who am I? Right? Because drugs don't define me, you know, alcohol doesn't define me. What do I like? Who am I?
Yeah.
And I think that's where I struggle for so long. Like, okay, I'm a drug addict and, you know, alcoholic, and I smoke cigarettes and I'm a nurse.
Yeah.
You know, which I don't smoke cigarettes anymore, just so you know. But yeah. That's kind of what I identified myself. But like, who am I? What do I like? And I think that's the biggest struggle, I'll say for me, but I know it is for other people, is finding out what you like to do with yourself.
Well, actually, that's the type of coaching I like to do, is like, what's next?
Yeah.
Like, what's next? You know, you're 2 years sober, and what is your life going to look like? What do you want it to look like? And I think that it's so important, like forgiving yourself, your old self, grieving drugs and alcohol and whatever other vices you have, and like bringing balance into your life, you know, and like starting a whole new world.
Yeah. I mean, it's things that you never even would think about doing, you know, like I love doing art now, you know, I do different types of things, and it's kind of like that's incorporating with like self-care to me, which I never did. It was funny. I was at, so my boss, she's big on self-care, which I never did when I was, you know, in active addiction, obviously. And she's like, you need a self-care day. And I was getting a massage, and I put my phone down, obviously. And, you know, I had it on Do Not Disturb, didn't look at it. And I was laying there, and I had this like epiphany, and I was like, wow, for all these years, I've abused my body, my one body that I have.
Yeah.
And I should be treating it now as if it is my one body, and it's stayed together through all of the stuff I put it through, you know? So like a massage. So yeah, it's about my self-care, but like I have this body, I need to take care of it.
Absolutely.
So yeah, it's definitely I mean, would I be like, okay, I would never know I like massages and, you know, liked art and taking vitamins and like kind of silly stuff.
I know, I just started taking vitamins.
I know, I'm like, oh, okay. The gym to me is my therapy.
Yeah.
I put my music on. Music's really big for me.
And this all has evolved through
over time.
Your recovery, right?
Yeah.
So like you just kind of have explored different things. And does every year change for you?
Yeah. So last year was definitely my hardest year. So throughout the first couple of years, it wasn't pretty. Like I said, I made like mistakes. Obviously, the one being not picking up was the only thing that I didn't do.
Right.
And I had a baby, and I was totally isolated, living in Broward in Fort Lauderdale, and I wouldn't leave my, like, I just wouldn't go out. Didn't have friends, didn't do anything, and Amanda was like, get out of your house. You know, like, you're with your baby 24/7, and I was definitely in, like, a deep depression.
Do you think that postpartum may have?
Probably, but here's the thing. I'm not as depressed as I was when I was using, so I compare it to that.
Right.
But so that I was like, I'm not that bad, you know, because I remember when I was bad and just didn't look like this, but I totally 100% was. I wasn't taking medication or anything like that. And that pain mentally like pushed me to get out and be a totally different person.
Right.
I mean, 100%. If you saw me like a year ago versus now, totally different.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So, you know, I do take an antidepressant. I'm, you know, not opposed to, you know, I think that whatever people have to take, they have to take. And getting out of my house more. I put my kids in daycare because I wouldn't. That was a big thing. I wanted to be a stay-at-home mom with them and work full-time, and it just didn't give me any time for myself.
Yeah,
and it was,
that's a lot. I mean, I always tell my friend, I'm not a parent. And I tell my girlfriends who are, some of them are single moms, some of them have a full, you know, family to deal with, which, you know, kids are like, I think each kid is two jobs, right? Because it's like day and night.
Yep.
So that's two jobs to me.
Oh, yeah.
And then like a husband or a partner or whatever it's called.
Is your third child.
Is like another, no, it's just another job.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, there might be children or not, but
depends,
you know,
it
depends on the person. But it's a lot. And to have a full-time job, I think that, when are you going to find the time? Because I am a dog mom.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And maybe I just got a puppy, so I'm a little tired. Okay.
Oh, yeah. You know, definitely.
But
I remember pre-puppy,
I'm exhausted.
I know.
You know?
I
like,
know.
I'm not kidding. Like, New York accent, exhausted coffee. Like, I come home.
I
like,
love that.
I'm just like, let me, what am I going to do? I'm going to get into bed and watch Netflix.
Yeah.
You know? And I have my, I'm very active. I'm very, like, busy always. But like sometimes I'm exhausted. And so I don't know how you guys do it, because you can't like my dog will chill with me. Like you can, sometimes your kids. No, won't yeah. Relax.
No, I mean, but you know what? If you did have them, you would figure it out.
You
know?
Do. And that's right. Kind of
when I had one, I figured it out. And then there was two. And I was like, oh man, how am I going to figure this out? And mind you, I have a French bulldog too who's thinks she's a baby. So
yeah, yeah. So you're really full on.
Yeah. So. You know, and that's just making sure that I do something for myself. And I worked on with therapy. You know, I have a therapist. I just restarted with her recently. But it was big about, like, self-care. Like, yeah. I used to ask, like, my fiance or my mom if I could go shower. You know what I mean? Like, can I go shower?
No.
Yes. When I had the kids. Because I was, like, felt like I guilty leaving them. I would ask to go shower.
Wow,
now I'm like
guilt.
I'm taking a
this
shower.
This mom guilt thing really sounds terrible.
No, I know it is, but so now I'm like I'm showering.
Yeah, yeah, you are.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely showering, and I'm a very big morning person. So once my kids go to school, like I'm doing some self care. I'm going to the gym. I'm taking a shower. I'm listening to music, you know. And then at night, the kids go to bed at 7. I'm not going to go to bed at 7 o'clock. So that's usually my like wind down time where I can, if I want to go to a meeting or just watch like a Netflix movie or something like
yeah.
that, like I can do that.
Nice.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
So, so now it's all about self-care.
Yes.
So if you could go back and tell your younger self something, you get to choose the age, and what would it be? So what age would you be, and what would you tell your younger self?
Oh, God, that is such a hard question.
I know.
You're going to have to answer yours after if you haven't before.
I don't know if I have answered it before.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I always ask people.
I don't even know if I've thought about it, actually.
See? Now you better think about it right now.
I'm really good at telling other people what
same.
To do.
Same. No, me too. And that's why I'm like, what's yours?
I'm like,
You know, and when I was getting sober this last time, so 7 years ago, that like it gets better. You know, when I was having to wrap my legs every day because I had like the wounds and stuff, like you'll be okay. Like you won't feel uncomfortable forever. Because that was like really shameful for me. And just knowing like what my life looks like today, you know, is beautiful, you know, through all the tragedy and tragedy. Oh my God, I can't even speak today. Tragedy and pain, you know, comes beauty. And, and that's what just, I think I've realized how strong I am.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you're a powerful example to other women for sure. I mean, I look up to you and look up to Matt, like and the work you guys do. So I'm going to avoid answering by saying.
No, I'm going to remember though.
You know, you guys help people for a living. Mm-hmm. So you have a company called Next Level, right? Mm-hmm. And you do, talk about more about what you do. Because I feel like, I know that it's not like having your own program if you work in, you know, helping people and all that. But I really do think it plays a role in how your life is. You're helping people all day long.
Yeah. And I have to preach it. Like,
well,
I have
it's also
to do
a reminder of like, that's where I was. I don't know. When I see someone, either when I go to a meeting or I hear someone's story or something, and they're like new, fresh.
Yeah.
And they're just off the streets and they're talking their war story or whatever. I'm just like, oh my God, I just don't miss that at all. I don't ever want to be there again.
Yeah.
And never there's a doubt. There's not one day there's a doubt in my mind that I'm not an addict alcohol.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I'm
for sure.
There's no like confusion for me. It's not like maybe I could drink. No, like I know I can't.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't really want to.
I don't either. There's very random moments where I'm like, ooh, that festival would be fun.
Yeah.
You know? Or I don't know. I was in Europe and like people were drinking a glass of wine and like they were. It was like 2 hours later and they're still drinking the same glass of wine. And
oh,
I'm
wow.
like,
what's going on here?
Yeah. I was like,
do you need help?
Yeah. I was like, it's collecting dust.
Yeah.
You
exactly.
know?
No, I think I've had one thought and it was only because like there was like fruity, like tropical drinks. And I was like, oh, that would be fun. You know, like a pina colada.
God, I know it's never fun for me.
So yeah, but that was like, I think like a one quick, I actually enjoy my life not using. I think that's what it comes down to. So, I mean, I know you I'll speak upon Next Level, but I wake up every day. I don't have to find out how to get money. That's exhausting. I don't have crappy people around me. That's exhausting. Lies, like all the stuff that it takes to continue to use is exhausting. I don't want any part of it. And I think that's where So like with Next Level, I really try to kind of fill in the gap. And, you know, obviously Amanda's the owner. When you get out of treatment or if you don't go to treatment, fill in the gap of like what they need in life mm-hmm. and how to stay sober. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people get out of treatment, you know, they don't know what to do. Yeah. I've had people that they have bills piled up. They need support with that. Like we're really supportive in that transition out, or if they've been to treatment a lot and they really struggle just with being outside in the real world. Because I know that is the hardest when you're in treatment. For me, at least, it was
give
pretty
a bubble.
Easy. Oh yeah, it was great. Just eat. They tell you when to wake up.
Oh my God,
you know.
I'll never forget when they gave me my phone back.
Oh yeah.
Well, I got kicked out, so I took my phone back and I went to Sober Living. I remember, and I was going through, and it was like Facebook and all that stuff, and I was like, that person, why aren't they getting sober? Like, why is it me? And and I felt like FOMO, like I wasn't. Now, it's so funny, my sponsor's sister coined the word JOMO, so joy of missing out.
I
and
love
that's
that.
How I feel.
Yeah, same, like, thank God.
And that, like, with gossip, with life, I'm just like, I don't even want to know. Like, don't even tell me. I don't want to know. I don't miss the party. I don't miss the feeling of, like, waking up and feeling like shit.
Exactly.
Or the feeling of, like, getting drunk and then feeling like I need to sober myself up for something, like to have a conversation with someone.
Yeah, it's the worst. I don't want any of that. Yeah, I love that. JOMO. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to start using that.
JOMO
now.
is important.
Yeah. No, but I mean, you touch base, even getting your phone back after you haven't had it for a period of time, you know, is kind
and
of
I'm mad because they made me delete some photos that I wish I didn't because, like,
same.
You know, I don't have photos of my baddest when I went into detox and needed a blood transfusion.
Oh my gosh.
So like my skin was gray when I came down to Florida, and like when they hooked me up to the blood transfusion, like you could start seeing the color going back into my skin.
Oh my gosh.
It was disgusting, but incredible at the same time. And there were pictures from the week before that they made me delete, and like I need those pictures. Like, I wish I could find them somewhere in some cloud or they're in, you know, somewhere on some server. But, you know, because sometimes, like, it's good. It's a good reminder.
Yeah.
To just, like, I'll go through my phone. I'm like, oh, God. Like, I don't even want to look at that. But I do because it makes me feel really good about where I am today.
Yeah.
You know, and how far we've come.
Because mine got deleted, too. I wonder why they do that.
I don't think they do it as much anymore. But I think they do it because people glorify a lot of their using. Like I was taught don't glorify it.
Yeah.
Not saying that I didn't have a great time in my 20s and
30s. Oh yeah, there was some time.
But
there was some
what
time.
Did it look like? The thing that my sponsor said to me and still says, like, play the tape out. Like, what did it really look like?
Yeah.
You know, it didn't look glorious.
I was sitting in my car most of the time.
I was in the bathroom a lot.
Okay, yeah. I use the bathroom a lot too. The bathroom's definitely the spot for
I wasn't
most
even
people.
Like on the toilet or anything.
No,
I was just like
sitting
in
the
bathroom.
Floor. Yeah, I usually sit on the floor. Yeah.
Why?
I don't know why.
I mean, really, just watch the show. You'll never want to do drugs again.
No, exactly. Seriously. I mean, that's another thing. It's the shower. On a side note, is I remember my last couple of days using. Is to shower. I couldn't shower.
Yeah.
My body was just like falling apart.
Oh God.
So to shower, I would sit on the shower, wash my hair, take a break, you know, finish whatever, get up, and I'd have to sit again. I couldn't even do my hair.
Wow.
Because my body was just like, you're not doing, and I was infected obviously from my wounds. So I was just like really sick. I didn't notice anything. I was just like, oh, okay, I guess I'll just sit on this.
It's
like, I didn't think anything
right,
of it. Yeah, I'm just going to, I guess, wash
Isn't
my hair.
Isn't that incredible how we just, like, let go? And I feel like, so now there are certain things that I'm really adamant about, like being on time.
Oh,
I'm
same.
Really adamant about being on time. Because I was, like, not even, like, hours, like, 5 minutes late. I was hours late, days late.
Oh, yeah.
You know, not respond, you know. It was just so bad. And then, but... You know, these are all the things that, like, you take pride in now, right?
Oh, yeah.
And isn't it cool to use those experiences to teach these other women?
Yeah.
Is it mostly women that you help?
No. Men, women, parents, you know, loved ones.
Sure, parents.
You know, so I think that, you know, me, Amanda, and then there's also, you know, a couple other people that work with us. We're really good with, we all work really well with different people. So like, I love parents. I think it's just from my nursing background of being understanding, you know, obviously I've been through it. It reminds me of probably how like my parents being through it was. I love the older geriatric population because I'm an old soul and I worked with geriatric patients. You know, Matt does really good with like failure to launch clients. So people that have never really known how to pay a bill or do laundry, you know, those type of things. Like he's really good with that or fitness, you know, and Amanda's really good with like a lot of kind of that like high end clientele, you know, women, strong women. She's really good with everybody, but we really will work with, you know, pretty much anybody. We do eating disorder, substance use disorder, mental health, digital addiction, you know, and
there's just so much,
so much. Yeah.
And that's another thing, like, you know, all the different types of addictions, people think it's like just drugs and alcohol, but it looks, there's so much more, so many process addictions, behavioral addictions. We talk a lot about like gambling, sex.
Yeah.
You know, I talk about eating disorders. Like these are really, really real feelings that take you right to where like alcohol and drugs take you.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? Absolutely. You know, I actually really like working with eating disorder clients because it was something new for me. I'd never been, you know, I never had an eating disorder. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess I've restricted maybe in the past, like, but I wouldn't define it necessarily as, or I didn't eat when I was using. I really like, I have this like overwhelming compassion for people that have eating disorders because I feel like it's not as accepted.
It's not as accepted. The problem is too, and you know, we can like wrap up soon, but the problem is with that is that you have to eat for life, right? So like with drugs and alcohol, it's really easy to say like, okay, I don't do drugs. I don't drink.
Just don't touch them.
Right.
Yeah.
With food, it's like trying to find a balance, and an eating disorder can look like restricting. It can look like binging, but it can also look like there are things called orthorexia where people eat the same thing every day. Yeah. There are things where people like are scared of certain foods or believe that if they eat it, like there's so many faces to it.
Yeah, but I feel like no one knows that.
No, they don't. And not only that, but men have a huge, I mean, men is a huge population, but they just don't think that, you know, it's just like bulking or, you know, whatever it is, like cutting for wrestling, and like they're part of this culture. And it's not even about the food, right? It's like really about the obsession that your mind goes into.
And the control,
and that's what
of
people
it,
don't
for sure.
get. Like it's like how our mind turns into this, like drives you insane.
I know. Yeah. I had a client that I tried to get into inpatient because it wasn't, you know, unfortunately working on a, you know, our level of services. And, you know, I talk about this all the time because it made me so upset. You know, when you get someone with a substance use disorder, you put them into treatment, they have a bed immediately. 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's hard.
2 weeks to get a bed. I'm like, so I said, I didn't care. I'm like, so what is she supposed to do for 2 weeks?
Yeah.
You know, like she could die. You know, like what does that look like? I mean, to me, that was just ridiculous that all the places had waiting lists. And that was, to me, kind of the moment where I was like, I really want to help like more people with eating disorders because it was
really
upsetting.
That's really interesting to know.
Yeah. It's not as, like, they don't think it's as crucial. You know, I don't know what the case is, but I was, imagine
telling.
It's
very hard to treat. The success rate is very low.
I know. Well, that's because what you said, like, you have to eat to live.
Yeah.
So it's always going to be in your face. You know, as long as I don't go around to whatever, you know, street or around people, I don't see it, you know, with drugs, but food, you have to go in your fridge. There it is, you know. So I just find it, you know, I really hope that there's, you know, for all like addictions, I just want like people to know that there's always hope and, you know, there's, it can always get better and there's always people that are willing to help and, you know, care. I mean, even if they're not clients and it's just like someone needs help, like I'm absolutely going to help them.
Yeah. Same.
Cause I would expect the same thing.
Of
like
course.
For my family or friends or myself, you know, like I would want that. I think it just shows that there are good people, you know, and we've been around a lot of bad people and are using.
Right. But it's funny because all these like bad people who get sober, You know, not everyone's bad or whatever, but like all these people who get sober who may not have been had that personality type or whatever, all of a sudden become like they people actually care.
I know.
Like, isn't it incredible? Like, yeah. I always say this at meetings and stuff, is but like some of these girls, like, I don't know you. Like, we're not by any means good friends, yeah. but like, I know if I call you, you're going to pretty much stop what you're doing and help yeah. me.
How
and I do the
that?
Same. Yeah. And it's incredible. And that's like where the recovery is and how good that feels. Like, that's just, that's better than any high, to be quite honest.
I agree.
That's how I feel.
Yeah, same. I agree. So you didn't answer.
I knew you were going to ask me. I was like, I thought I, for a second, I thought
you're not
going to
get
through.
Out of it. Trust me.
Okay, so I don't know. I think
I can't
so.
Believe no one's asked you this question
no,
before.
No, and so it's so funny because there were some journals that were sent down to Florida, and I found an old journal of mine because I always journaled from like fifth grade, and I was 11 years old in the journal, and I already had like page one, exercise plan, page two, eat it, like, and then this like sad entry, and it was like just, and it was about this, and I think I would tell that girl like, you don't it doesn't have to be so hard. Like, just, you know, you're beautiful. But I don't know if I would have listened.
Yeah, right? Of course.
Because I was that girl who people would tell me things like that. Or honestly, what I got a lot was like, you're so pretty if you just lost weight. That was a lot of messaging. The Greeks do that.
Yeah, okay, I get that.
But anyway, the point is like, I don't know if I would have listened, but I think that's what I would have told myself. Yeah. Like, you'll grow out of this phase kind of thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's crazy that you were doing that at 11.
I know. So I guess a lot of the signs were there.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you finally shared that, since you ask other people all the time.
Yeah.
See, you gotta answer those questions.
I know. I mean, I feel like I would say different things to myself at different phases of life, obviously.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. For sure.
But thank you so much for coming.
Yes, thank you for having me.
I'm so excited. And I'm really happy you came on and shared your experience.
Yes, thank you for letting me share. I appreciate it.
You have an amazing story.
Thank you.